and welcome to episode 6 of The Power of Dance, Dance for Health. This week we're going to be talking about the benefits of dance and our health, and of course I will be joined by Dame Darcy Bustle and Dr. Peter Lovett. So we'll just open this up with, can dance really help our health? We put that over to you, Peter.
Okay. Well, this question is very close to my heart because the answer is fundamentally yes. We know that dance is a fantastic thing for people's health. Now, what's remarkable about dance is that we know that there's two types of things that dance does really well. One, it works as part of a preventative health program. So in other words, it's fantastic for maintaining good health and for preventing the onset of poor health. And secondly, dance is fantastic for a treatment for different types of conditions that people have. But so dance is fantastic, but what's wonderful about this and intriguing from a scientific perspective is that there are so many questions still unanswered about the relationship between dance and health, which means we'll be researching this for years to come.
Wow. I mean, there's so much we can learn about this, but I think, where did you do your research? How did you find this out?
Okay, so I first got into this relationship between dance and health when I was a senior academic at the University of Hertfordshire, and we were looking at, there's a research paper that came out in 2007, which showed that when people with Parkinson's disease started to dance, when they danced, then this led to significant improvements in their medical symptoms. Now, Parkinson's disease is a neurodegenerative disorder which leads to a range of physical and psychological characteristics associated with it. So it leads to things like poor balance. It can lead to physical tremors. It can lead to shuffled walking or slow walking and lead to fear of falling over. So there are some physical symptoms and some psychological. We know it leads to higher levels of depression and it can lead to poor problem-solving abilities. So when this first paper came out that said that when people with Parkinson's took part in tango dancing, that it led to an improvement in their balance and their coordination and their walking, frankly, as a scientist, I thought, well, this can't be true. I mean, how can dancing change something fundamental that's going on in the human brain, which leads to these negative symptoms? And so we looked at all the evidence. And as skeptical scientists, I brought in a neuroscientist and some physiotherapists to make a team together. And we started to research it as well. And we found that it does, that dancing does improve the health of people with Parkinson's disease. And it improves their physical health and their psychological health and their quality of life. So when we saw this in Parkinson's, we then thought, gosh, what other types of symptoms can dancing help? And we had all these questions. So we went through the whole list. We said, okay, so what other types of symptoms can dancing help? What type of dancing is fantastic for dance? Or which type of dancing works and which type of dancing doesn't work so well? We're asking, what dose is required? So how much of this wonderful wonder dancing wonder drug, like a terpsichoreal wonder drug we've got, what the dose of that is necessary? And then what habits get in the way of people not taking this medication, this dancing medication. So that's where we started back in 2007. And then we've been researching it ever since.
And Darcy, that linked very well with the documentary you did, was it Dancing to Happiness, where you actually studied, I think it was Parkinson's as well, wasn't it? A group with people.
Well, that's where I got to meet Peter, fortunately. And that's where I got to see it in work, you know, and got to speak to those people and how it changed how they got on with their everyday. I mean, obviously it wasn't going to replace, you know, the medicine at the same time, but to know that they had it there as a tool, the confidence it gave them, that they knew that dancing was going to make a material difference to how they felt and how they got on with their days, that was the extraordinary thing. And it was hard for them to explain the feeling that how it changed and how they got on with, you know, really difficult tasks. But it's fascinating. I mean, in dementia at the same thing as Parkinson's. But it, overall, just that dancing of happiness, you know, from very young to the elderly, how dance helps you as you age. And as, of course, we are a growing, aging population, we're all living longer, which, you know, is great and wonderful. But we want to age healthily, don't we? We don't want all these elements to come on board. And to know that dance can actually strengthen your posture, strengthen your muscles, you know, all of those things where, you know, with aging, the posture gets weaker, the muscles get weaker. And activities like dance is one of the most important things to keep a healthy spine, healthy bones, healthy muscles. And I think we forget that. And like everything, you know, we also think, I think when we take on exercise or dance exercise, we believe we have to do it to a high extreme to get the benefits. And I know we've said this in the other podcast, but it's really important to know that it just has to have a taster of it to keep you ticking over. It's just that little element of keeping the body oiled, the joints oiled, so every joint has to be rotated and mobile, but also the suppleness, but also what you gain from the strength from dancing and how it stimulates the nerves and the muscles. And that's such an important part that we've got to keep going when we get older.
Yeah, can I speak into that? Because my mum is 85. And at the early part of last year, she fell down the stairs at a theatre and broke her leg in two places. So she was in hospital for a long, long time. They fixed her leg, and she's got some other secondary health problems as well. And she couldn't walk, right? So she couldn't walk. Her mobility was terrible. And then I hadn't seen her since before lockdown. But all during lockdown, she's been doing some online dance classes with Anna Marie Stern and Longevity Dance and Fitness. And she's been doing these online. And then suddenly I saw her last week. She's come to visit us now. And she's walking. I mean, it's just extraordinary. She hasn't got a walking stick with her. She hasn't got a frame. Last time I saw her, she had a Zimmer frame. And she was really shuffling little tiny steps. Very, very nervous of going out. Very nervous of walking on the pavement. And now she's doing 6 exercise classes a week.
Wow.
And, it's 85 with a broken leg. And she's been getting stronger. And everything you just said, Darcy, about having flexibility and the strength, as we get older, it can help us recover from all kinds of conditions and keeps us fit and healthy. And so she's been an example.
Wow, what a wonderful example.
It's lovely. And even the smallest changes can mean so much, can't they? The same thing with my mum was doing the DD Mix shake-up. She didn't miss one throughout the summer. And even that little 10-minute burst, she said she could nip up the stairs quickly without having to lean on the banister or go a little bit slower one step at a time, which was happening before. She can now come, you know, quite easily without getting out of breath. And the small changes for her have made a huge difference. So it's, you were mentioned how much dose do we need of dance, but you don't need 3 hours a day or even an hour.
No. Yeah, and there is a lovely part with the Royal Academy of Dance, how they deliver Silver Swans and how transformative that's been. It's designed for the over 55s, but of course it's there for everybody. And their data is extraordinary of how it's changed those, you know, that age group's people's lives who have never ever experienced dance or had even had a passion for dance, but they've taken it up then. And knowing that, I don't have any of these skills, I don't know what to do, but it's so well designed that they can cope with it at their own ability, get all of those attributes as we've just been talking about, but of course balance, and because they're learning classical ballet, the main elements and base movements of classical ballet, what they gain, as you both said about your parents, your mothers, that the balance was so important as you get older, and why we lose balance and why we're not training ourselves to gain that balance all the time. And dancing, you don't even have to think because you're there balancing without even realizing.
It's great, isn't it? I mean, that is really fantastic, because once you get that fear of falling, I mean, it really does disrupt all of your activities of daily living if you're an older person living in a kind of uncertain, uneven, flawed area. But I think what's wonderful is, so we're talking about dance for older people and how fantastic it is for older people, which it absolutely is. But dance doesn't only give a health kick to those people. The research evidence shows that you get a benefit in a range of symptoms. I'll give you a quick list. So we know that dance has been shown, and these are all in peer-reviewed studies. So dance has been fantastic for helping reduce body mass index, so BMI, and also for reducing resting heart rate. So both of these are indicators of health. And a high level of both those things can be indicators of poor health. We know that it also improves cardiorespiratory endurance. So in other words, that whole thing, the way the heart and the lungs function is improved by engaging in dance. We know also things like maximum aerobic capacity, walking speed, a balance and mobility, lower limb endurance. And for conditions like Parkinson's, arthritis, a whole range of different conditions, right from a young age, so from teenagers, right the way through to the older things. So the types of improvements dance can give to people is right across their physical health, from their heart, their lungs, to their limbs. It really is quite fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, I know Giselle will notice this as well, a lot of my friends who all went into the ballet world, so many of them fell into dance by accident, often because of an ailment. And one of those significant one was asthma. And was always, doctors always advised young kids that had, you know, bad asthma to go into dance, to strengthen up the lungs, to understand the stamina that's needed and everything, that will support them. And that was often also down to their posture and how you pull up and how you pull, you know, and just you're getting through a class and how then it assisted them. And then they've realized this joy that they love from dancing and this focus and dedication. And then they're there, are now professional dancers.
Which
it's
is amazing,
so interesting,
isn't it?
I think also though, you get the children who dancing and they feel good, so they don't think about the health benefits. They're just taking it for granted and getting the benefits without knowing. But I guess it's that pool of people who didn't maybe do it as a child, feel like it's too late to join in their mid-20s or 30s, and then think, oh, well, I can't now. You know, we can talk about it and we know the benefits because we all dance. So how do we get those health benefits across to people, encourage them to start at any age? There's no right or wrong age to start dancing.
Well, just imagine, you know, if you think of, I suppose, especially the fitness of individuals. And if now doctors are saying, well, I'm not going to give you any drugs for your fitness. This is what you've got to do. You've got to be active. You know, just imagine if they actually suggested go and do dance classes to help your well-being, your physical well-being, your fitness levels. And that was the piece of medicine, as you were saying, Peter. Yeah. But that was for everybody in society, not, you know, just people with major, you know, medical problems.
Absolutely. Well, there are so many things to say about that. This is really exciting. So back in 2014, something called personal health budgets came out. So some countries had these personal health budgets, which meant that people were given their health budget and they could choose which interventions they could buy with their budget. And so there were some very famous cases in Australia, this one was, of somebody choosing to buy pole dancing sessions with their personal health budget. Now, of course, at first they had to defend this and say, well, why, you know, are you wasting money? Is this a frivolous spend? But of course it wasn't, because the core strength that's required in pole dancing and the upper body strength that's required for it, it was seen as a fantastic, fantastic thing. We also know there's something called social prescribing. So you can start prescribing all kinds of social activities. So we might start prescribing dance or the arts or other things. Now, of course, if the doctor starts prescribing, there's two sides. One, the doctors need to have the evidence which shows that dance is a fantastic intervention and can positively aid health. So they need their evidence to support that, which the academic and research community are generating that research to deliver to consultants and GPs, which is fantastic. And the other thing, the other bit of learning I think that some dance teachers might do as a CPD or something that the Royal Academy of Dance might offer or somebody might offer, is training for dance teachers of how to adapt their dance teaching according to the medical needs of certain types of people, or even for, you know, for people with different types of conditions, so that they understand the benefits of dance to those different types of symptoms that people have. So just to have an add-on to their training, maybe, if they don't already have that, so that they know it. Then, of course, I think we'll get the consultants and the GPs who will be confident in prescribing because they've got the evidence base behind them. And then the dance teachers will be confident in adapting some of their classes for people with different types of needs. And then, of course, then it can really grow, which will be fantastic.
Yeah, it dance. I mean, we know the mental and physical well, that it changes how people feel. But I think the data, as you say, is one of the most important things. And I want to see that arrive right now. Uh-huh. We all know that we can't take antibiotics for the rest of our lives. And it's just how we lead our lives, how we plan our every day that can actually change our health.
And you mentioned the tango, Peter, was a special one that worked really well. And obviously ballet for the core strength and stability and balance. But is there one style that's better than others?
No, there's not one style that's better than others. There's a whole range of different styles which impact different types of things. Now, I'm going to do a shameless plug. I'm going to pretend I'm an American now and go, hey, everybody, you can buy my old book, Dance Psychology by Peter Lovett. Because what this does, there's a chapter in here on health, and it lists some of the academic research. It's a textbook which lists, an easy-to-read textbook, which lists some of the academic research into this area. Now, so just to give you an overview, we know that hip-hop has been used with teenagers and has been fantastic for BMI and cardiovascular functioning. We know that ballet, of course, is fantastic. We know tango. There's also things like Turkish folklore dance, which has been used for people with arthritis, contemporary dance, Irish set dancing has been used to great effect, Greek national dancing, and Balinese dance. So there's a wide range of different styles of dance, which all have different impacts. Now, what's really fascinating is that these different styles of dance, you know, as we know from DD Mix, you know, the whole diverse mix of different movements gives you different flavors and different cultural perspectives and different ways of moving your body and experiencing that movement. Well, each of those different types of movements that are included in that will have different benefits for different aspects of your health and well-being. And while some forms of dance, they're like some forms of dance, like some forms of music, some people love, and other forms of dance, like other forms of music, people kind of, you know, don't really want to go there because some of the aspects of the culture. Now, what we know is that, for instance, hip-hop dance, two studies have shown that both, and these I'm not going to go into all the complexities, so you know, I apologize if I start going off too deep, I apologize for that. But two very good studies have looked at the health benefits of dance. One of them used contemporary dance and one of them used hip-hop dance. Both of those forms of dance led to significant improvements in BMI and cardiovascular functioning in the females that took part, but not in the males that took part. Yeah. So straight away, we had this difference here between males and females responding differently to the dance in terms of their health outcomes on both of those two very different styles of dance in both hip hop and contemporary dance. So it led to the question of, well, is it the case that men don't get a health benefit in terms of cardiovascular functioning? And what we found is that's not the case at all. Men do get a benefit, but the dance has to be specific for certain things that men would engage with. So, for instance, there was one study, of a men-only study, looking, and there was a young men engaged in Balinese dance. And what they found after experiencing Balinese dance is there was an improvement in cardiovascular functioning and in VO2 max. So the whole thing is a maximum aerobic capacity increased after men engaging in Balinese dance. These were young men, late teenagers. And another study looked at a load of Greek men, and these Greek men were either assigned to the gym-based activity or they were assigned to go to a Greek dance class. All of these men were over the age of 50. They'd all had heart attacks. And what they found was that those men who'd been assigned to the Greek dance session for 12 weeks had better cardiovascular outcomes 12 weeks later than the men who'd gone to the gym. Now, the reason for this is that the guys who'd gone to the gym after about 6 weeks got bored and started to drop out of the study. They just stopped going to the gym. They got bored with that exercise. But the guys who went to the Greek dance class, they were forming social bonds. They were laughing. They were joking with each other. And they then, because they were still going every week for 12 weeks and they were still dancing, they had this improvement in cardiovascular functioning. So what we know is that different dance styles work for different people in different ways. And different styles of dance, some are fantastic for some symptoms, and other dances are fantastic for different symptoms. So we get this whole mixture. And that's why we need a real mixture of dance. It's like a multivitamin that everyone could take, because that gives us the best kick.
It's a blockbuster vitamin, isn't it? Well, yes. Multivitamin. But it is really interesting because the data is also there that dance, I mean, if you want to get fit quickly, sort of for myself as a dancer, we knew very quickly that it had to be a variety of exercises. So that's why dance triggered those to actually get you fitter quicker. Because if you kept to the same exercise, as you said, you don't just get bored, your body gets used to it and switches off. Yeah. So it doesn't burn as much. So if you're a runner and you always run, you'll notice that your body actually gets used to that and you don't burn so instantly. Of course, when you start, you get an instant reaction of change physically and health. But then if you keep going, it's about variety. So that all fitness instructors recommend that one day you do swimming, the next day you do running, the next day, you know, you maybe play a game or tennis or something like that, so that variety is there. But of course, dance is already designed like that. Yeah. It's, you don't even have to choose, the variety is there. And they've done exactly that study about, you were talking about, Peter, but on fitness as a whole, because dancing, they use two groups. I think this was in Germany, where they found out the group that went to the gym and the group that did the dance class, they had the same time, then they both did it to music, but it was 15% better for you to dance because it stimulated every nerve within the whole body. So as a body workout, it was more stimulating overall. And every nerve that stimulated every ligament and every muscle. So you were getting a full body workout, yeah, as going to a dance class than you were to a gym, because you had to get off a bicycle, do that for 20 minutes and you did something else, but you just didn't have the variety to get you fitter quicker.
Yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it? That idea of variety, and dance gives us all of that. I mean, this is why it's so hard to define what dance is, because dance can be so different. There are so many different styles of dance. So I love that idea of having a multivitamin, and then you might have, you know, ballet might be the equivalent of vitamin D, and jazz might be your vitamin B6, and something else might be something else, vitamin E. Yeah. But what's great is that dose of vitamin, so we need a daily dose. Now, we know that, you know, the recommendation, the health recommendation, is that people do about 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week, or about 75 minutes of vigorous activity every week, or a combination of those two things to get that going. And of course, dance is great because you can have that variety of either very low impact movement, you can have moderate physical activity in dance, and you can have vigorous physical activity in dance. So it even has a mechanism built into it to enable a wide range of different styles of motion, so that we really can, you know, get our prescribed dose of movement every week, and we can get that through dance.
And it, like we've said in all of these episodes, you don't have to be professional. You can just dance, move, put your favorite music on. And I think, you know, if we can just get the inhibitions gone, make people realize the benefits, and that it doesn't have to be so precise, there's no wrong or right to dance. This isn't, you're not taking an exam at the end of this, are you? You're just doing it for your own personal health. So it's fascinating. So we know all of this, and we've got now the science, the proof is in the pudding. We can feel the benefits, so we can see it on paper as well. You've done the scientific research. So why aren't people doing it as much as we would like?
Wow.
I have an idea. So if we had a little bit of money behind us, the three of us, we need an exceptional advertising firm to then do like the girl can. This girl can. Those extraordinary plugs that gets out there so everybody is aware that the science is there, the data's there. Now we've got to open the doors, open the flood doors, to know that every space around the UK is there and ready for people to join in dance. And that's
how the
firm can sell it to us.
Yes.
Definitely.
Well, let's lead by example. Let's do that.
Definitely. So how would you sum up? Why, in a few words, why must we dance?
Who, me?
Oh, yes, go
sorry.
For it.
Okay, why must we dance? Well, dance, of course, is fantastic for our body and it's great for our mind. It keeps us fit, it keeps us healthy, it keeps us socially bonded, it keeps us thinking clearly, it keeps us emotionally refreshed, and of course, it keeps our heart beating. And without that heart, then there is no life. So we need to keep that going for as long as possible. We need to get rid of our inhibitions, see dance as a very normal, natural activity, because we are born to dance. And then we just need to do it. You just need to get out there and just have a wiggle.
Yeah, I think it is exactly that. And if you start young, those inhibitions won't kick in either.
Yeah, form the habits early. So if we make that, you know, that's why we need to dance at every opportunity as a child going right the way through life. Because dance is a lifelong activity. So we shouldn't stop it.
It's never too late either. Never too late. There are so many programs to start as a complete beginner. I think you could find anything in your area that would be beginner lessons, beginner ballet, beginner street, hip hop, you name it.
There's no excuses now, is there?
No excuses. Well, I think that's all we've got time for this episode. So thank you, huge thank you to Dame Darcy Bussell and also Dr. Peter Lovett. I was going to say Dr. Dance first, Dr. Peter Lovett. So that's the end of our first series. I hope you've enjoyed the first series of The Power of Dance, and we will be back in September with series 2. But in the meantime, you must dance.
Bye.
And the gals are attending a rare social gathering. Every last one of them is dressed in a plain, homemade Lindsay Woolsey dress dyed with butternut or walnut juice. And there isn't a frill or a brush-colored ribbon to be seen.